It's Parshas Vayigash, Vayigash Eil of Yehuda. So the Medrash writes as follows. Kinei Hamlochim Ne'adu Ovru Yachdav. Pasuk says in Tehillim, behold, the kings met. Ovru Yachdav passed together. Kinei Hamlochim, who are the kings of Yehuda v'Yosef? This refers to the two kings of the Jewish people, Yehuda and Yosef. They met. Ovru Yachdav. Avru Yachdav would mean they passed together. However, the Medrash makes it as a play on words. Avru is from the term Evra. Evra means anger or fury. What does it mean? Says the Medrash. Nismale Evra, ze al ze. They became angry one with another. Ze Nismale Evra al ze, ve ze Nismale Evra al ze. Each one became angry one with the other. Hey Maro came to Mo. The Pasuk continues. They saw and they were shocked. They were amazed. People were surprised one to another. So on brings further drushes of the psukim, and it concludes and says, Amru, Melachim Medainim Elu Imelu, Onu Ma'ich Baslanu. Kings are arguing, are fighting one with another, Yehuda and Yosef. What's it our business? Yoil Melach Medainim Melach, Vayigashel Yehuda. Says the Medrash, it's appropriate for a melech to be debating with, to be arguing with another melech, another king. Vayigashel Yehuda echad bechad yigashu ze Yehuda v'Yosef. V'ruach layel v'neim elu ashvatim. Amru melachim edainim elu imelu anu ma'ich baslanu. Again, the Medrash repeats, if kings are discussing, are arguing one with the other, so then what is our place here? So, the Medrash is portraying what we have here as the climax of the story of Yosef Ve'Echav, Yosef and the brothers, where Yosef is sitting as the king of Mitzrayim, known to the brothers who have come before him, not by his real identity, but just there as the king of Mitzrayim. And Yehuda is coming forth on behalf of his brothers, approaching Yosef. Yehuda as the melech of his brothers, as the leader amongst his brothers, the one who ki abducho oraves hanar, because he took responsibility for Binyamin, he is the one who is coming forward. He is the one who is coming forward to speak on behalf of the rest of them. Yehuda and Yosef are two kings that exist within Bnei Yisrael, within the Jewish people. There are two kings which exist here at this point in time. Because as we've been learning these parshios, beginning with Parshas Vayeshev, where we start getting into the Shvatim, and we learn about Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef, we have these two parallel personalities developing into leaders within or without the Jewish people. Yosef, with his dreams of Malchus, his dreams of the brothers and and his parents bowing down to him, is of course one person on track to Malchus, and we follow his path to Malchus from his dreams to the sale to Mitzrayim, till his ascendancy in the house of Potiphar, to the point where he gets thrown into jail and then rises in the house of Paro, to him sitting on the throne now. Yosef is certainly a melech. He's certainly a melech in the Jewish people then. And Yehuda is also developing this way. Because when Yosef is sold, remember that it is Yehuda's advice which ultimately seals the fate of Yosef. It was Yehuda who said, "Mabetza kinare gesachino v'chisinu esdame l'chuvenim kareinu le'ishmaelin." It was Yehuda who said, you know, what point is there in our just killing our brother? Let's sell him instead. It was Yehuda who suffered for that originally when his brothers, it says, "Vayered Yehuda me'esachav." After the sale of Yosef, he descended from the midst of his brothers. He did not obtain a strong position with them. Perhaps they blamed him for what had happened, what had been done, when they saw the devastating effect on Yaakov Avinu. And that led to the story of Yehuda and Tamar, where Yehuda indeed really grows into being the melech of the Jewish people. Where Yehuda, in that story of Yehuda and Tamar, not only does he father Peretz, who's going to be the grandfather of David HaMelech, but he also displays the power of character, of personality. When it comes down to it and Tamar is about to be killed, Yehuda comes forth and acknowledges and admits tzadka mimeni. With the help of Tamar, he comes and he emerges in a way which is indeed regal and responsible. So on the one hand, they develop in these ways. And it's from that story of Yehuda and Tamar that Yehuda develops again not only the progeny, not only Peretz, who's going to lead to David HaMelech, the child, but Yehuda himself also emerges because of what he did there. And then, as the Torah tells these two stories parallel to each other, they start to merge. They start to merge when the brothers go down to Mitzrayim and Yosef gives them the ultimatum that he won't hear from them again or see them again unless Binyamin is with them. And of course Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to send Binyamin, but Yehuda was the one who ultimately gets Yaakov to send Binyamin. He waits till the need is really there to send Binyamin. He waits till the need is really there for them to go back, till really they had no food left. And then he approaches Yaakov and he says, Anochi arvenu miyadi tevakshenu. I'll take responsibility for him. You'll turn to me if anything goes wrong. So Yehuda becomes the leader amongst his brothers. So those are the two leaders then. But they're not just the two leaders then. They're the two ongoing leaders of the Jewish people. We know in the later times that we would find this division, that there would be a Melech Yehuda, a king amongst Yehuda, and there would be a Melech Yisrael, a king of the ten tribes. And that king of the ten tribes would be, originally it would be Yeravam ben Nevat, from the descendants of Menashe, from Yosef. Much of the time it was from the tribe of Yosef. Those were the two kings which the Jewish people had then. And we even know of what we look forward to, Lasid Lave, at the end of days, where we speak about the two Meshichim, the two kings of the end of days, the Mashiach ben David and the Mashiach ben Yosef. So there is always present themes. These two kings, the Melachim Medainim Zeimze, these two kings that in this case were facing off one against another. So in the climactic story here, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, as Yosef is about to reveal his identity, as the brothers are about to come back together, it's bringing together Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda approaches Yosef. It's going to be between the two of them, Yehuda expressing his concern for his father to Yosef, and Yosef revealing himself to Yehuda, that they're going to come together. And it's symptomatic of a future, of a significant future, that the Navi prophesizes about, where he speaks about the two staffs, the two sticks, right? The one of Yehuda and the one of Yosef, and how the two of them will come together and be fused together to become one. That's part of what we're seeing here in Vayigash Elav Yehuda. As Klal Yisrael's rift in that time, the division between the Shvatim, the Machlaikas that we spoke about in the past, that's here between Yosef and his brothers, as it is being healed, it's being healed by Yehuda and Yosef to some degree coming together. So in that context, I would like to explore with you a little bit further about Yehuda versus Yosef, about these two, about how the two show themselves differently in the unfolding of these two elements of leadership within Klal Yisrael, within the Jewish people. In last week's parsha, the Ramban gives the classic explanation for all of this story that has developed here, post Mechiras Yosef, post the sale of Yosef, but the unusual behavior of Yosef vis-à-vis his brothers. The pasuk says, as the brothers of Yosef came before him, So it says, Vayar Yosef Zecha Vayakirein, Yosef saw his brothers and he recognized them, Vayisnaker Alehem. But he behaved towards them like a stranger and he spoke to them harshly. Vayakir Yosef Zecha Vayim Leikiru, he recognized them, they didn't recognize him. Vayitzkar Yosef Zachalem Yisasher Cholam Lehem. And he recalled the dreams that he had dreamt about them and he accused them, Vayim Alei Meraglim Akam, he accused them of being spies and so on. Says Rashi, what does it mean? He remembered the dreams. Asher chalom lehem yada sheniskaimu. He realized that the dreams were fulfilled. Sharei hishtachavu lehem, because they had bowed down to him. His dream was that they would bow down to him. Look, they came and they bowed down to him. The Ramban disagrees. Lufi dati shadavar behepa. Says Ramban, to me it seems that actually the inverse is true. Ki emar akosuv ki b'rois Yosef esecho mishtachavim lehem zochar kol achalem asher chalom lehem. When he saw his brothers, he remembered his dreams and he realized that none of them had been fulfilled yet. He knew, in interpreting the dreams, that all of his brothers would first come and bow down to him. That was the dream of the sheaves, of the bundles. When they looked at the sheaves, it wasn't some of them, it was all of them. Right? It doesn't say in the pasuk a number of sheaves. It doesn't say a number till it speaks to the stars. But Yosef understood anachnu ma'alim alumim was all of his brothers. And so, if all of his brothers were bundling bundles, if all of his brothers' bundles came and bowed down to his, then the fulfillment of the dream would be when all of them came and bowed down to him. But behold, that hadn't happened. So when Yosef saw Binyamin wasn't there, he said, "Ay, the dreams. The dream isn't ready to be fulfilled yet." So what did he do? He thought of this trick. He says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make up this whole story. I'm going to accuse them of something. And the only way they're going to be able to prove themselves to me is by bringing Binyamin. Then they'll come down with Binyamin. And then all 11 of them will bow down to me. Otazai. Then the dream will be fulfilled." Says, why? This explains why didn't Yosef, as soon as he saw them, just say, "I'm Yosef. Tell my father, relieve him of the agony, and come down here." He would have come right away. So he waited for the first dream to fulfill with the 11 brothers. Then he said, "Can bring my father down, which would be the sun and the moon, as well as the 11 stars." But Lulei Kain continues the Ramban, and he says, "If not for this, if not for this, it would be considered a great sin for Yosef. How did he allow his father to grieve like that for so long over him, over Shimon? Even if he wanted to maybe torture his brothers a little bit, right, for what they had done, they should suffer a little bit for what they had done to him. That wouldn't explain how he could do that at the expense of his father in his old age." He did everything in the proper timing in order to make sure that the chalaimais, that the dreams which he had, would be seen through to be fulfilled properly. Should be seen through properly. This is what the Ramban says. Ramban goes on and he explains about the second thing. Even when Binyamin came, he didn't say, "Okay, now you 11 bow down to me, let me tell you, I'm Yosef, and bring the brother." Why did he do the whole thing with the gavia, the goblet? So Ramban adds another explanation, which is not for us to discuss right now at this point in time. But he goes on and he says, this whole thing was based on Yosef's wisdom in deciphering dreams. He says, "Look, you know, even beyond the question which I just asked you, that when the brothers showed up, he should have told them right away. How about when Yosef was the CEO of Potiphar? He couldn't send a postcard. Mitzrayim wasn't so far away from Eretz Yisrael. Why did he wait? Why did he allow his father to be tortured for so long? But again, Achrei Sheshama, right after he had the dream, so then he indeed knew that this was something which had to be fulfilled. This is the thesis, the idea of the Rambam. And that's why he reads Pshat in the Pasuk. When Yosef saw the brothers, he recalled the dreams, and that guided his actions going forward from then on. This is what we have with Yosef. I want to tell you a different story. This is a story which is told in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos. And I've shared this with some of you before. The Gemara tells the story about Chizkiyo, Melech Yehuda. Chizkiyo became very, very ill. And the Gemara says, on Daf Yoram and Aleph and Maseches Brachos, Vayomim Ohem, and that day, Cholach Chizkiyo Lamos, Vayove Elav Yeshayo ben Amay Tanavi. Chizkiyo became very ill, and Yeshayo came to him to visit. And he said to him, "Kayamar Hashem tzav leveitzcha, ki meitza tov lo tichya. Give your final instructions, because you're going to die, you're not going to live." Says the Gemara, "Amar le maiku lehai." Says why? Like he had told him. The Gemara says, "Meitzata in this world lo tichya, and you won't live in the world to come either." Chizkiyo was a very righteous king. Chizkiyo came from a father who was a rasha achas, and Chizkiyo was a righteous king who restored Torah to its rightful place in the Jewish people. In dramatic form, the Gemara says in the days of Chizkiyo, Torah study was so widespread that it hadn't been before. Says the Gemara, so why should Chizkiyo get this terrible punishment? Amar Lesi said to him, Mishum Doyasakta Bepiriya Verivya, because you chose not to involve yourself in developing a family. Amar Le Mishum Dechazeli Beruach HaKadosh. He says, that's what you're upset at me about. You know why I didn't do that? Because I saw with Ruach HaKadosh, I saw with divine inspiration, that if I would have children, that those children would not be good. That the children would not be good. In fact, Chizkiyo had a son whose name was Menashe. Menashe was a very evil king who brought about the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. So he said, the reason why I didn't have children, why I chose not to have children, was because I didn't want to have these terrible children, which Ruach HaKadosh told me I would have. Amar Le, so Yeshayo said to him, Yeshayo Hanavi said to him, V'hadikavshi d'rachmon olam alach, what are you concerning yourself with Hashem's secrets? My demifkides ivoy lach lemebad, what you've been instructed to do, you should do. You have a mitzvah, so go ahead and try to create a family. That's what you should do. To start figuring out with Ruach HaKadosh, this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what I'm not supposed to do, based on how he sees things turning out. Will he have good children? Won't he have good children? That, says Yeshayo, in other words, is none of your business. You have to do what you're supposed to do. May the mifkid esiboy lochem ever. Umad denicha kame kutche brichu, liavet. Let the Rabban Hashem do what he has to do. Okay? So Chizkiyo was very smart. He said, okay, Yeshayo, if that's what you say, I'd like to marry your daughter. Right? Maybe between my zechuyos and your zechuyos, between our merits together, maybe we'll be able to do something. That's the Mar goes on, continues the story. There are other aspects to the story we learn from here that says that even though the Gzeir was already decreed, Tefillah would be able to do it. This is where the Gemara says the famous and important principle that even if the sharpened sword, afilu cherev chadim unachas al tavore, even if the sharpened sword is lying across the person's neck, al yisrayish atzmei min arachmim, shouldn't despair of prayer, of davening for mercy from Hashem. Chizkiyo davened, vayasev panav el akir, and the gzeira, the decree was undone. That's not the point, however, that I would like to bring out from this story. point I'd like to bring out from the story is this first stage, where Chizkiyahu makes a decision based on Ruach HaKadosh, on divine inspiration, on some form, not a nevuah, not an absolute prophecy, but on something like it. Something like a chalom, like a dream. Right? The dreams of Yosef were something infused with Ruach HaKadosh, with some kind of a divine inspiration. That's why he took them so seriously. They weren't just stam, simple dreams. He took them seriously because there was an ingredient of Ruach HaKadosh in there, that he was supposed to be the king. Chizkiyahu had Ruach HaKadosh of his own. And because of that, he also chose to do something or not to do something. And Chizkiyahu was berated for it. Yosef was not berated for what he did. And the contrast is very sharp. Because when you heard this Ramban that I just read to you before, explaining why Yosef did what he did, were you happy with it? Let's say, very nice, Yosef, you had a dream. Your poor father. Maiden Nifkidis, Iboilach Lemebad. You have a mitzvah of kibud av v'ein. You certainly have a mitzvah to avoid torture av v'ein. So what are you doing? Because you have a dream that this is what's supposed to end up happening, so you say, so I'll talk, I'm not going to tell him. And not only will I not send him a postcard, stamasai, but I'm even going to torture him, because I'm going to put up this whole story to get Binyamin from him, where he's going to be with Shimon gone, with me gone, where Yosef knows how Yaakov is responding. I see she called him Yosef, and then Shimon, and then Vance Binyamin, Tikachu Olai Hayu Kulana. Look what you're doing to me. You're taking, right, this is son number three, Rachmanu Litzlan, that you're taking away from me. But it was all justified in Yosef's eyes. Why? Because of the chalom, because of the dream. Now, if one of us would do something like that, we'd be very upset at each other. What kind of a thing is that? Now, Yosef did it because, again, it wasn't just a dream. It wasn't just some kind of a fairy tale. He understood that the chalomos, that the dreams of Yosef, who was the Bala chalomos, as we've been discussing the last couple of weeks, Yosef discerned in the dream the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that was enough to tell him what to do and tell him to ignore the kibud av v'ein factor, because this would be what needed to be done right now. This is what the Ruach HaKadosh told him. But Chizkiyahu, who had Ruach HaKadosh, who Yeshayahu didn't dispute it. He agreed that it was Hashem's word, but it's Hashem's kafshid rachmana. It's Hashem's secrets. You have direct instructions. You have knowledge of things in the foggy background about what's going to be in the future. But Hashem told you straight certain things to do. And one of them was, you have a mitzvah, piri v'rivia. You have no right to forget about what Hashem told you straight, based on Ruach HaKadosh. It would seem that these stories are direct opposites. What Yehuda does, what Yosef does, what Malchus Yehuda does, what Malchus Yosef does, Malchus Yosef is based on the dreams, and Malchus Yehuda is based on, but, what's going on? We can't do it. You know, it says in the second Ali of the Parsha, "V'le'yochel Yosef li'apek l'chol anitzavim olav." Yosef could not hold back with all the people standing there, so he said, "Okay, everybody, get out." What does that mean, right? When, and nobody was around when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. So what does it mean Yosef couldn't hold back? Or he couldn't take it. Baruch atu Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam shehachol mi'ad v'dvarei. So, you read Rashi, sounds like, okay, Yosef's now ready to reveal himself to his brothers. However, to do it in front of everybody, that he couldn't take. So he told everybody to leave. However, there's another way to read the pasuk, which is that he couldn't hold himself back anymore. Just like we have earlier in last week's parsha, where at certain point he just was overwhelmed with emotion and he had to turn to the side and cry, and then, you know, he came back to them after he finished crying. Here, he couldn't hold back from revealing himself anymore to his brothers. He had to reveal himself to his brothers. That's where it was up to. which means that he would have waited. He was planning not to do it right away. Why would he plan not to do so right away? So what would obviously be the answer would be, because the second Rus, right, different than just what the Ramban wrote that I alluded to, the part we didn't read, is that the second Rus was to get Yaakov to come down. Oh, now he's going to say, Binyamin is my prisoner. Binyamin stole my goblet. He's my prisoner. Your father wants to see him so much, he's more than welcome. He could come down and see him. And then Yaakov would come down, and he'd come in the door, and he would bow down to this strange king so that he could come and see him and meet Binyamin. And then the strange king would say, surprise, I'm Yosef. And it would all be done. We don't even see exactly clearly where the second dream did end up being fulfilled. When did Yaakov bow down to Yosef? When he came down originally, he didn't bow down to Yosef. We have later, in next week's parsha, Yaakov bows down to Yosef. Right? Vayishtachu Yisrael Reish Hamitza, 17 years after he comes down. But arguably, Yosef would have held back so that Yaakov would come down, expecting he's coming to the viceroy of Egypt, whoever this man is, and would have bowed down to him. And the dreams would have been fulfilled, but he couldn't take it anymore. L'yachol Yosef L'Yisapik, the Meshech Chachma, Rabbi Meir Simcha says, L'yachol Yosef L'Yisapik L'chol Anitzav Malov, because after Yehuda gave this emotional plea, and he said, our father is going, his mama, she's going crazy, he's tortured, he's going to, right? So Yosef, who was the benevolent ruler of Mitzrayim, could not answer Yosef with Yehuda with rejection. He couldn't say no. He says, right, my cabinet, my people who are sitting here, they're going to think I'm crazy. Right? The whole way that I rule Mitzrayim doesn't fit with this kind of cruelty that I would be exhibiting here. So he had to reveal himself. Right? Another way, of course, to understand it is that Yosef pushes. He couldn't take it anymore, and he had to finally just, you know, tell his brothers after this emotional appeal, after he saw them being Moser Nefesh for Binyamin, realizing how special Binyamin was to their father, so he saw that they understood the difference between the children of Rachel and the children of Leah. But you understand that there could even be one other element, more similar to the Meshech Chachma, but not exactly the same, which is that Yehuda said to him, you're torturing your father. You're running the risk of killing your father. Our father. Not your father, but our father. And at that point, right, to Yosef, he said, well, then I have to forget the dreams. So the dream won't be fulfilled. In other words, we looked here tonight and we see two separate stories. We see one story of Yosef the king, who, as he emerges as the king, he defines his behavior not by what Hashem tells him to do in mitzvahs, kabed es avicha ves imecha, but by what the dreams told him, the destiny held for him. And then we have another story of a king of Yehuda, Chizkio, who didn't do what he did because of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do. Excuse me, he was told not to do what he did because of dreams, right? That's not what you're supposed to do. You should be doing it because of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do. That was the charge for the Melech Yehuda. Don't follow Ruach HaKadosh. And in a certain sense, when Yehuda's making his point here to Yosef, when Yehuda's making this final plea to Yosef, the kings meeting, facing off one with the other, that's the point which Yehuda brings across to Yosef. That's what he gets Yosef to change. Yehuda makes no reference to Yosef's dreams. But he makes the case so strongly to Yosef about what's going on right here and now that Yosef says, forget about the dreams. I have to worry about what's going on here and now. It's one thing for Yosef to do things, to play with the dreams when the story of Yaakov is a little bit hidden from him. When it's brought out to him, like Yehuda brought it out to him, he can't ignore it. And he goes ahead with it. But this is issue A, so to speak. This is contrast A between the two of them. Between Yehuda and Yosef. Between how the two of them would indeed contrast with each other. Doing what you need to do, or just trying to see how the hidden dreams will be able to be played out. I do want to say that one could make a point and say, not so simple. Chizkiyo, after all, also wanted to follow Ruach HaKodesh until the Navi came and grabbed him and said, you can't do that. You have to do what the mitzvah tells you to do. We even find, in a certain form, by David HaMelech himself. David married Bathsheba. Very controversial marriage. The origins of it were very much clouded by issues of ritzicha, of adultery, right? Not real ritzicha, not real adultery, but clouded by it. Clouded by it. And there was a chet of David HaMelech which was done there. David HaMelech didn't sin in the ultimate sin, again, of murder or of adultery. Kol Omer David Chata, to that degree, Einai Elataya. But you know who was the first one to say David Chata? It was David. When Nasan HaNavi came to him, he said, Chatasi. When Tilim Nun Aleph, this 51st Psalm, is David HaMelech doing tshuva for the Chet of Bathsheba. And he says, Chatasi Negdi Samit. Right? My sin is going to always be, is always in front of my eyes. Why did he do it? Why did he do this with Bathsheba? Chazal tell us that it was all part of a Ruach HaKodesh thing. He saw Bathsheba. So it wasn't just simply that he was attracted to Bathsheba. But when he saw Bathsheba, so he saw the Ruach HaKodesh, that there was going to be some kind of connection between them, and from them the kingdom would be born. So the mistake was, timing is everything. But he followed a little bit of the Ruach HaKodesh. So you see it even in David to some degree, following that bit of Ruach HaKodesh. But again, like Chizkiyo, who was confronted and told, you're going to die because of this, because forget Ruach HaKodesh, do what you're supposed to do. David HaMelech also nearly lost everything because of this. Because he allowed the Ruach HaKodesh not just to say, oh, it's Bashert, at the right time I'll marry her. But he allowed the Ruach HaKodesh to have him do it now, even at the cost, to some degree, of my demifkeris, of what you're supposed to do right now. To David, what's compelling is what you're supposed to do right now. But to Yosef, until this last moment, which he's never really taken to task for, he's not been told this chayt. Until this last moment, Yosef is guided by chalaymas. Appropriate for one who is called Baal HaChalaymas. Who we're introduced to as the Baal HaChalaymas, as the master of dreams. So this is one big difference of Yehuda and Yosef, of these two malachim that face off with each other. Let's look at another big difference. Mechiras Yosef took place in Shechem, in the city of Shechem, which becomes labeled as a mokaim hamuchan lepuranias, a place which is just seems to be primed for all kinds of negative things. In Shechem, Inu as Dina, the story of Dina happens. In Shechem they sold Yosef, and in Shechem the kingdom of Kal Yisrael split into two. In Sefer Melachim, after it was decreed to Shlomo HaMelech that his kingdom would ultimately split into two, because of Shlomo HaMelech's own sins and failings. The pasuk says, when Shlomo, but it said it wouldn't happen in his lifetime. So in Perek Beis it says, Vayelech Rechavam Shechem, ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael aham lechaysay. Rechavam went to Shechem, because that was the place, Rechavam was the son of Shlomo, that was the place where the Jewish people would come to make him king. Vayik Yishmael Yeravam Menavot Vuaydenu b'mitzrayim asher borach mipnei ha-melech Shlomo Vayeshev Yeravam b'mitzrayim Vayishluchu Vayikru Loi Vayavai Yeravam
Cholkal Yisrael Vaydabru Chavam Leimar. So they called to Yerub, they called, and Yeravam ben Avot, who was from the Shevet of Yosef, came. He came forth. And again, I've discussed the story with some of you before. Very important story. The story is about how the kingdom splits. Yeravam represents the Jewish people in a tax revolt against Rechavam. He says, you know, your father, Shlomo HaMelech, he put heavy yoke on us, heavy tax burden on us. And now, please relax that burden. You know, you're a new king, start afresh, make life easier for us, and we'll be good and faithful and loyal people. We'll be your loyal subjects. So he says, do me a favor, give me 3 days. I want to think about what you're asking, and then I'll decide. So Vayivat HaMelech Rechavam. So the king Rechavam went and he took counsel. He took counsel with the Zekanim, with the elders that stood in front of Shlomo, his father, when Shlomo was alive. His father's old advisors. And what do they, he said, what do you say? I should say to them. And they said to him, you should know that if today you'll listen to them and you'll relax the tax burden, you'll lose a few bucks, yeah? But you're going to get their loyalty. They'll see that you listen to them. And you're going to have them as your people forever. Listen to them. And then he went and he took advice from another group, from the guys who he went to school with. And he said, what do you say I should do? And they said, oh, don't listen to them. If you listen to them, then they're going to think they have you wrapped around their finger. So you have got to show them who's boss. So you tell them that if you think you had it hard in my father's day, you just wait and see what it's going to be like under me. And the pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the mind of Yeravam, of Rechavam, that he should listen to these young whippersnappers, to listen to their advice. And so he did. And in doing so, he lost the kingdom. When he came back to them, after 3 days, he said, you ain't seen nothing yet. And they said, well, if that's the case, goodbye. And Yeravam was able to split off these tribes who left because of him forcing himself on the Jewish people. What's the significance of this story? Yehuda, ata yaiducha achecha. You know, there are two terms which are used for someone being a king. The two terms discussed by all the Rishonim, right, in more than one place. And we say on Yom Tovim, we bring the pasuk, Hi Lashem HaMelucha U'Moshel Bagoyim. Hi Lashem HaMelucha U'Moshel Bagoyim. Melucha and Memshola. Melucha, kingdom, is something which is welcomed by its subjects. Interestingly, you know what the term Lehimalech means? Right? Lahamlich, right, means to be a king over, right? But there's also Lehimalech, right? What happened? He was Nayatz. The Pasuk uses the term over here of him taking Eitzah, taking counsel. But a different word for taking counsel is Lehimalech, to consult with. Ein Meine Melech Elayim Kein Nimlochim B'tzibur, the Gemara says. You don't appoint a king unless you consult with the tzibur, until you consult with the public first. A king implies someone who's accepted, a melech, I should say, rather, implies someone who's accepted by the people. Kilashem Hamlucha, Moshel Bagoyim, over the nations he rules. Memshola is not accepted. It's forced. It's the power of a domineering ruler. When Yosef had his dreams and all the brothers came and bowed down to him, the sheaves of the brothers, and the brothers heard the dream, they said to Yosef, Hamaloich timloich aleinu imashel timshol banu. Will you be a king over us? Will you rule over us? Right? So say the Rishayim, the Ibn Ezra. Right? Maloich timloich is, will you think we're going to accept you as king? Or we won't accept you, but you're going to force yourself upon us as king? Those are two kinds of things. And those two things are Yehuda to some degree in Yosef. Yehuda ataya iducha achecha. When Yehuda was given his kingdom, when his father said to him, "You'll be the king," he said, "Yehuda ata yoiducha achecha." Your brothers, they will acknowledge you. They will accept. They will accept what you. They'll accept you as the king, right? At aydesa, you admitted, right? But no, it's more than that. Yehuda ata yoiducha achecha. Your brothers will have you as the acknowledged leader over them, welcomed. When Yehuda stood here before the rest of them, he didn't force himself before the rest of them. The opposite. He didn't even try to force anything on his father Yaakov. Reuven said to his father Yaakov, "You've got to send me. I've got to take Binyamin. If anything goes wrong, kill two of my sons." Whatever that means. Yehuda says, "I'm going to wait until Yaakov's going to realize he's going to have to send me. I'll wait till there's no food left. Right now I'm going to try to force him to do it. I can't force him to send Binyamin. He doesn't want to send Binyamin. I'll wait." He waits. He waits. He waits. The pantry is empty. They know they're going to die if they don't get anything. Yaakov says, "You got to go. Go." He's acknowledged. He's accepted. Yosef. That's not the way Yosef's kingdom worked. Yosef's kingdom, the way he interacts over here with the brothers, Yosef's kingdom was memshala, was ruled. They didn't accept him because they admired him. They didn't accept him because, you know, the timing was right. They accepted him because he was the one with the power. Everything was in his hands, and he exercised that power. Remember the Rashi in last week's Parsha, where everybody came down to Mitzrayim, right? And Paray said, they came to Paray. They asked him for food. He says, "Go to Yosef. Whatever he tells you, do." Because they went to Yosef, and Yosef says, "I'll give you food, but you have to have a bris milah." Right? Paray said, "You got to listen to him. He's controlling everything. We tried to store stuff on ourselves, in our own pantries, and what happened? It all got rotten. Only his stuff stays. He's got a magic touch here. He can decree that the tefuah can become rotten. Who would he decree about us? You better listen to him." Yosef, there was a strength. Now, in a certain sense, remember when Yosef first became king of Mitzrayim, it was because Paro said, "Wow, can we find anybody who has the divine spirit? Like Yosef has the divine spirit." But in the end, it's a koyach which Yosef uses with strength. It's a koyach which Yosef uses with strength over his brothers. Yosef, even throughout, even till the end of Parshas Vayechi, the brothers don't see him as someone that they accept. They see him as someone who has control, who has power. They think, "Oh, he has power and he'd really be ruthless to us. He's just not being ruthless to us because Yaakov is still alive." Right now, Yaakov was still alive. Now that Yaakov died, Yikruvu Yimei Avi, who knows what he's going to do to us right now? They came crying to him. Yosef cried, no, "I'm not trying to. Why don't you just accept?" You know, Yosef is forced. And Yehuda is accepted. And the kingdom of Yehuda falls apart, of Rechavam. When the Jewish people come to him and they say, "Look, just don't force yourself on us as king. Don't make it impossible for us. Don't take these terrible taxes from us where we feel ruled ruthlessly." And Yehuda's answer should have been like the answer of the Zakenim, which is, "Of course, I want you to welcome my kingdom." And that would be the way he would have their hearts forever. That's the kingdom of Yehuda. But instead, what did he do? Instead he said, "I'm in charge here. I can take from you whatever I want. And you're going to see, you're going to learn." And that didn't work. That broke away and that created the kingdom of Yosef. The Malchus of Yosef. So that's a second aspect between Yehuda and Yosef. And there's a third aspect between Yehuda and Yosef. And the third aspect between Yehuda and Yosef, at least the way we see it here, And to some degree as well, to some degree, the way we see it later is that Yosef is a king of the Jewish people, second to the fact that he's the king of Mitzrayim. He's primarily a king of Yavducha Amim Vishtachavu L'chulomim, and secondarily a king of Hevei Gevir Li'achecha, being a master over his brothers, second, not first. Whatever the dreams were that were about his brothers, but it happens through him becoming master over other nations and then coming back to the Jewish people. Whereas Yehuda is the other way around. He emerges as a king amongst his brothers before anything else happens. Before anything else happens. So, these are the Shnei Malachim. These are the two kings amongst the Jewish people. The Malachim Hamedainim, Elu im Elu, the kings who are judging and dealing one with the other. We looked a little bit at this confrontation, and we saw how perhaps the perspective of Yehuda goes against the perspective of Yosef, not even knowing again openly who they're talking to and what they're talking to. But, you know, Yosef with the image, the dream, but where the dream is supposed to take him, and Yehuda with the practical, but this is going to kill my father. You can't do it right now. You can't do it right now. That in itself shows us something of Yehuda being understandable and Yosef being cryptic. The melech that makes sense versus the maishel that you just follow. The melech that you accept versus the maishel that you obey. The dreams. Vasepis. Why? What is it? It's just the word of Hashem. Right. Versus the argument of the here and now. This is what we need to do. This is how, in the greatest sense, we go ahead. In some sense, we know that Kol Yisrael requires both. That the ultimate completion comes through both of these malachim. Comes through both Yosef, who in some sense is ruled by this sense of destiny, and Yehuda, who's ruled by the sense of what it is that we're supposed to be doing. What it is that we're supposed to be doing right now. It's a long, complicated path. You know, there are those who say, Rav Kook writes in his Pirush on the Agadais of in Brachas, he writes about that meeting between Chizkiyo and Yeshayo, and he draws a very beautiful, simple basis for the discussion between the two of them. It's interesting, I won't go into the details of how he develops it, because in a certain sense it almost seems like the opposite of this picture. But he says, you know, a Navi, Yeshayo is the Navi, a Navi is, his eye is towards the ultimate visions of the future. That's his job, to present the picture of what lies ahead for the Jewish people. And the Melech, the king, his job is to rule over the people day to day. Day to day. Right? The king is the one who carries things through, makes sure things happen. The Navi is the visionary. Down the line, the Melech is the executor, makes sure that things happen. Interestingly here, of course, in this case, Chizkiyo is thinking about the future, and Yeshayo comes and says, you've got to do what's in front of you right now. You've got to do what's in front of you right now. But in some sense, now that certainly comes across as the contrast between Yosef, what Yosef has to do, what Chizkiyo has to do. Right? Visions for the future, right, could be something that right now doesn't work so easily. But this is the ultimate destiny. This is the ultimate destiny. And many times indeed, where that happens, it's not coming from an internal cohesion or strength of the Jewish people. Whatever strength that's coming from, wherever Yosef is being positioned to do his thing, could be out there amongst the Ummahs in the framework of Golos. So much of what happens in the framework of the Golos is a suspension of our being able to do right now what a Jew would supposed to normally be doing day to day. Because what's unfolding is something towards the path of the ultimate destiny being fulfilled for the Jewish people. I can't do what I need to do now. Right? But this is some step towards a future where it's all going to happen and come out differently. Everybody knows the famous story about Rabbi Akiva and his peers coming past the Mokom HaMikdash, viewing the Mokom HaMikdash, Tzayfin. Right? During the time of the Churban, they see wild animals walking around on the Harabayas, and they're all crying, and Rabbi Yehuda is laughing. Rabbi Akiva is laughing. They're all crying, understandably. The Beit HaMikdash is in ruins. They can't do anything to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu right now. Like, look where things are. The matzav, the situation, the way it is so terrible. And Rabbi Akiva is laughing because he says, this is a step towards something that's going to happen in the future. The Nevuahs, the Nevuah of Zechariah, the Nevuah of Uriah, right? He puts together where things are ultimately leading. So he's laughing about the future, and nobody understands why he's laughing. How could you laugh now? What we have now is so horrible, so desperate, so terrible. Yeah, but it's a step. It's a step towards something that's going to be unfolding in the future. In a sense, you know, maybe this relationship, this comparison isn't so hard and fast and simple, logical. But in a sense, that's the Malchus Bal Korcho. That's the kingdom against our will, the kingdom in a certain sense of Yosef. You know, where we go through phases, periods of time where, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu rules over us. He has us do things. We don't feel the fulfillment in the current phase. It takes some vision of being able to see that it's something for down the line, something that's taking us someplace in order to validate it, in order to see it as something. You know what the big difference is between Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David? Mashiach ben Yosef dies. Mashiach ben Yosef fights the war, the great war, and then he gets killed. He doesn't get necessarily even to see the happy ending. Mashiach ben David is the one who presides over the Jewish people, building the Beis HaMikdash, back in their land, when everything gets to be done the way it's supposed to be done. Yosef the Baal HaChalomos was Yosef in Mitzrayim. Was Yosef ruling over the brothers when the brothers didn't easily accept it? The whole situation is foreign. It's about a big plan and a vision for the future. One which often brings compromise in the present. The present is by definition unfulfilled because it's just a step towards the ultimate future. Whereas Yehuda is come. He makes sense. He should rule over us. He's the king of the Jewish people. We do now what we're able to do now, what we're supposed to do now. It's fulfillment. When you put these two together, you have Klal Yisrael to some degree coming together. When the two of them fight with each other, when Yehuda sells Yosef, when the practical sells away the vision, separates from the vision, you have a very major rift, a very major division that grows within the B'nai Yisrael, within the Jewish people. Vayigash El of Yehuda. In the beginning of our parsha, the moment before the actual climax, Yehuda approaches Yosef and they come together. They come together. The Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef. The realities of what to do now with the vision for the future. They come together. They merge together. And that somehow brings us together. What we have to do and what we have to envision as the step towards ultimate fulfillment should come. B'mehera b'yameinu.